The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Support for this podcast and the following message come from Corient. Corient provides wealth management services centered around you. They focus on exceeding your expectations and simplifying your life. Corient has been helping high achievers just like you enjoy their lives more fully, preserve their wealth, and provide for the people, causes, and communities they care about. As one of the largest integrated fee-only registered investment advisors in the U.S., Corient has deeply experienced teams in 23 strategic locations. Corient has extensive knowledge spanning the full spectrum of planning, investing, lending, and money management disciplines. Leverage Corient's exclusive network of experts to craft custom solutions designed to help you reach your financial goals, no matter how complex they may be. Real wealth requires real solutions. For more information, connect with a wealth advisor today at Corient.com. That's Corient.com. Corient.com.
This podcast is a member of the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network. Visit voicesofwrestling.com to hear the rest of our great podcasts, as well as show reviews, columns, opinions, and updates across the world of wrestling.
You shut up, Hawkins!
MyBookie presents Shake Them Ropes. Use code ROPES. Double your first deposit. Shake Them Ropes. Jeff, Chris.
Chris, Jeff.
Recovering from the week.
I have watched so much TV this week that my eyes have been hurting. And before we taped this show, I needed to lay down. My eyes are just like, I'm done looking at stuff. I wasn't even really tired. It was just around like 6 p.m. My eyes were like, I'm done. We're not staring at anything more. You need to just close them and we need to be done for right now. And I rallied and I'm here. But there's been so much TV.
I shut off Twitter for election week.
I don't have that luxury. I'm making video content over on YouTube now. If you look up Don't Worry About the Government, you can also find it on the at DWATG Twitter account. So I have to keep following what's going on in the news here. But I wish that it was over. And I would just like, not even because of outcomes, I just want an outcome so that I can move on and write about something other than this.
I'll give you something not this to talk about.
This is the not this show.
Unbeknownst to some people, I think I've mentioned it on this show a few times. Growing up, a lot of kids had Dungeons and Dragons, the game. I had the James Bond role-playing game. So I am a huge, huge James Bond fan. And of course, Sean Connery passed away. I believe Saturday at the age of 90. Are you a Bond guy at all? Or are you a Sean Connery fan?
I am a Bond guy. I am absolutely 100% a Bond guy. I mean, if you remember, for a long time, my icon on Twitter was Dr. Nove, and it was like actually Dr. No, and I just like wrote in Dr. Nove over it. I'm a big fan of James Bond. I love 60s spy caper stuff. Like, I like the Avengers a lot. So when Diana Rigg passed, that was rough. Diana Rigg was also very fun in her Bond movie as well. But Sean Connery, dude, like he's Bond.
Connery had the luxury of when they were making the movies, they pretty much kind of jumbled a bunch of plot points from different books and put them together in a movie. And so the law of declining expectations. By the time Roger Moore was done, they had like nothing from the original source material. And of course, poor like Timothy Dalton. And I love the Pierce Brosnans.
Yeah, no, GoldenEye is really cool. I mean, it's like deliciously campy now, and it's very 90s now, but GoldenEye was also cool. And like, you've got to remember, too, that it had like this legendary video game support behind the movie.
Sneaky underrated in the canon. I know everybody loves Goldfinger.
Yeah, of course.
I love From Russia with Love.
Also great.
Because I love Robert Shaw as Donovan Red Grant. Other movies in the...
I think the jetpack in that movie is one of my favorite, yeah, like Sean Connery Q devices that he has. That's always been like one of the ones that I think about when I think about like, you know, Q tech.
Non-Bond Connery films, of course, the modern ones everybody loves, you know, The Highlander, The Rock, The Untouchables. I love a Sidney Lumet film called The Hill, with him and Ossie Davis. Playing British soldiers who are POWs, and it's kind of a guards versus the inmates type thing, and there's a little rebelling against the system, and how far can you rebel against an oppressive system before a person breaks type of thing. It's a really well done film. It's worth watching if you've never seen it. Any other Sean Connery movies that you'd recommend?
Like Marnie comes to mind, but I don't know that I'd recommend Marnie.
Okay.
Yeah. So no.
Darby O'Gill and the Little People. You want to go there?
Yeah, Marnie's just one of the Alfred Hitchcock's films that like never landed with me. And when I was going through his catalog, I was like, I'm looking forward to this. This is the Sean Connery one. This would be cool. And it's, I mean, really, North by Northwest is like a better Bond movie than a lot of Bond movies.
So since we're not doing a lot about Laundry Wars, it's going to be kind of a scattershot show, I think, at times. I mean...
Is there anything less interesting than the stakes of you're going to get a slot on the Survivor Series team? Like, when they announce that, I kind of laugh.
Yeah, I want more rewards. I mean, we say that every year, and they're never going to give it to us. I'm kind of light in the news section because I avoided basically all news of all kinds. Matt Jackson kind of dealing with a little bit of an injury going into full gear. Thinning ACL, partially torn MCL, which happened during the Butcher and Blade street fight when he came off through the table. The table leg apparently whacked his knee quite good, or the knee went through it. One of the dangers of that. So that might be affecting his mobility entering full gear. I didn't see anything else that really moved my radar in terms of news. Did you?
Kylie Rae.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah, that would probably be the big one.
Yeah, Kylie Rae retiring, saying that she is no longer a professional wrestler, was not on the TNA Bound for Glory show. I have opinions, but they're not worth much. So it's one of those things where you hope she gets the mental help that she's looking for.
Yeah, no, and I hope she gets to a better place. It just sounds troubled.
I mean, yeah, and I had speculated it might just be pressure of success, but I think even that was kind of irresponsible. I did that on a roundtable show over with a Throwback and a few Fightful guys. But yeah, it's irresponsible to do it, so... You know, just wish her the best and hope maybe someday she comes back. Because I really enjoyed watching her. I liked watching her in Rise. I was hoping she'd be a big star in AEW. But I understand the spotlight's not for everybody. And show business is brutal, kids. I don't care who you are. Even if you're at the top, it's brutal, and those people have problems too.
You know, you have a concept when you're getting into like rock music, touring bands. It's kind of the world I know a little bit better about what it's going to be like when you're backstage, what it's going to be like to be on stage, what it is going to be like to interact with musicians, what musicians are like, what the pay is like, what the work is like. And when you get there and you do it and you're backstage and actually in those environments, it's just a very different thing than when you were a kid growing up and you thought, oh man, you know, being in a rock band is going to be so cool. It's going to feel good. It doesn't necessarily. So I don't know if that's what's going on.
Well, I'll give you another thing, because it comes from my world. I did stand up from 1991 to about 2008-ish, I guess, off and on for those last 8 years. But nevertheless, when I moved out to LA, I was doing the circuit. I was doing showcases, all these other things. I did two industry showcases, watched a bunch of others, watching guys that I knew and things like that. And there was one, actually there were two instances. One is a very famous person. I won't name drop for fear of embarrassing him on this one, but one who is not. Professional comedian, had worked for decades. And was finally getting his big break. He had been kind of, you know, he's the big guy who had been touring in the Midwest at you know, for like 5 or 10 years, comes out to LA to do his thing. And he just panicked. And he couldn't remember jokes. He melted down on the biggest night of his life. And I was watching, and there's nothing you can do about that. You're just watching a guy feeling for him while he's searching for this thing he's worked all his life for. And I don't know if it was, you know, what happens if I succeed or what happens if I don't succeed, but both of those can get in your head and really screw with you. And so I put that on the table for it being the cause of her wanting to leave, given that it was right before the biggest nights of her life or moments of her life. But I don't know that for a fact. There's I just know that show business, yeah. It what it does is it attracts people who are missing something in terms of self-esteem many times, and they think they're going to find it in show business with crowd adulation and things like that, and it doesn't get there. So it won't ever fill you. It won't ever fill the hole in your soul, so to speak. I don't know if you've kind of witnessed the same in music, but I know from acting and comedy, there's a lot of neurotic people in acting and comedy.
Oh yeah, no, absolutely. And like, pressure can be good and pressure can make you better, but you know, there is, as you sort of described, kind of dueling pressures whenever you're on stage, of fear of success and fear of failure at mm-hmm. the same time. And I think, at least my own experience is, I've went into doing radio and I've went into doing music. Now I don't care about failing in music anymore. And I'm also I guess less worried about it. Cause my expectations are different and I'm also more confident in my playing and stuff, but still worry about it all the time with radio.
Oh, first day in radio, I turned off the transponder accidentally.
No, it's terrifying, right? And like, you know, as you're trying to grow out a show, that's been my experience over the last 4 years. It's like, on one hand, you're scared of failing, like, you know, launching a Patreon, you're scared, like, what if I launch this thing and no one subs up and I make $0, like, how embarrassing and, like, soul-crushing and damaging your self-esteem will that be? Then you also get scared of, like, what if I become successful and then, like, you know, you know the way media can be, where, like, people, we stand to cancel these days now. They fall in love with you and then they decide they hate you and, like, do you really want to go through that meat grinder too? You feel those pressures at all times, kind of at all levels of the client.
Chris, I'm in year 6 of Shake Them Ropes, I think it is, and the people who tell me I suck most are the people I care about.
Yeah, but I stan you so that I can cancel you.
That's true. Speaking of being under pressure, these WWE shows.
Survivor Series is bringing out the best in this company.
There are two people in professional wrestling who get it right now, and everybody else doesn't. Those two people are Eddie Kingston and Pat McAfee. Dear God, do I love me some Pat McAfee. I love so everything about Pat McAfee this week. Yeah. I love the promo. I love the stupid, silly eventually aborted ceremony for raising the banner to the roof. I love the beatdown of Killian Dane. I love this guy more than most things I've loved in wrestling in the past 10 years, other than maybe the Four Horsewomen.
No, the Kings of NXT are so fun. I like the already slight friction between McAfee and Pete Dunne.
Yes.
I mean, what McAfee gets is he's this big guy, like he's this big personality, but he also gets subtle. And he gets that you can get across plot points and characterization nuances without clobbering someone over the head with them. Like, mm-hmm. We get that there's not... Okay, Oni and Danny are on the same page with McAfee, but Pete Dunne's... He's along for the ride right now, but, like, we also get that the dynamic's a little bit different here with Pete Dunne.
Yeah, because Oni and Danny Burch have become absolute... garbage human beings, far too cocky for their position. Now that they're in this gang, they're like, we're in a gang, we're invincible, blah blah blah. And Pete Dunne's just kind of there going, I gotta have these morons on my team too. You know, he's the suave professional hitman amongst guys who just want to go in there and shoot it up. That's his thing.
Yeah, and McAfee thinks he's using Dunne, but Dunne's using them.
Yes, McAfee thinks he's a mastermind.
Yes.
When he's really the lieutenant here.
No, it's a really fun dynamic. McAfee is never trying to get himself too over at anyone's expense. I mean, the beatdown of Killian Dane was great because it made Killian Dane look tough. I mean, he went up against this new, well-represented faction. They got the better of him. They beat him up ruthlessly at the end. But, like... Dane went in there and he was a house of fire during that time. I loved
McAfee pulling Dunne off of Dane, almost like
talk about that later.
Yeah, almost in Tombstone, like Curly Bill Brosh is getting Johnny Ringo not to get into a fight. It's like, whoa, these guys are out of control. Let me back them up real quick. I adore the interplay of this, and personally for me, the thing I want most now is I want you to take the blinders off of Roddy Strong and let him cut a promo on the Kings of NXT, because I think that'd be spectacular.
Yeah, I'm really excited. It reheats some of these feuds, right? Like Roddy Strong versus Pete Dunne is going to be a really interesting and fun match, and there's just a ton of different dynamics you can explore with that. And, you know, Burch and Lorcan as a heel tag team champion, like, it's a good formula. Like, those guys are stiff and rough, and they will be really great foils for the Undisputed Era here.
And now for the airing of grievances by Jeff Hawkins. Let's start with my one main roster point, because it's the only thing I care about on the main roster. If we're going to rerun Sasha Bailey, why did we have a clean finish, and why was it just a setup for Carmella? Utterly ridiculous on both counts.
I mean, the worst part about this is even more important than just a rerun. This was about Sasha's first successful title defense.
This should be the biggest thing in Sasha's career right now, is successfully... Say that, Hawkins. Successfully defending this title and getting the monkey off her back. Getting off the schneid, if you will. And it's just, it's an opening segment for SmackDown. Ba-da-ba-ba-da-ba.
And a reintroduction of Carmella's segment at the core of it. It's not even really about Bailey and Sasha. It's about moving Sasha on to Carmella. And so, like, no, it's bad in many different ways. The scene ends with the introduction of a new character, so we focus on the new character, and the new character's the takeaway of the scene, not the actual events of the scene.
Chris, I believe TakeOver 30. We get the big reintroduction of the women's division being something special in NXT. We get Toni Storm coming back, and then we get the great reveal of the motorcyclist. I'm probably reversing the order of these two, but in comes Ember Moon. And she's going to be a big deal in this division right now. Got that snappy finisher. Got a new haircut, new look, new attitude.
Offensive style.
Gets beat.
Yeah.
Clean. Clean.
Clean. And she doesn't even really work the new offensive style that they were talking about and debuting in the last match.
What in the blue hell? No, Jeff, you gotta stick with it. They're probably gonna turn her heel because of this. No, well, hold on. You know,
was it, that and if they did that, that's fine. But it, like, I mean, just again, world of kayfabe here. Why would a wrestler come out, debut a new style 1 week, and then revert to their old style the next week when, like, the prior week they were flashing the new style?
I was screaming at my TV, and I don't get that involved. I was like, what in the? What was the use of watching any of this? For the past 3 weeks, we'll rebuild her now. No,
You just reintroduced her. There should be no rebuilding at this point.
The whole point of this was to give Io Shirai contenders that were gonna hunt her down, and you just killed one.
And Dakota Kai, of all people in this division, does not need to be rebuilt right now to be a contender to Io Shirai because they've gone through that feud.
Look, I get what they're saying. Oh, you see, it was Raquel Gonzalez who helped Dakota Kai, and therefore Dakota Kai didn't really get the win here. She cheated, so we should be mad at those two. No.
Losing's losing. Winning is winning.
Yes. Yes. And Triple H knows better than this because this is how Curtis Axel.
He would never want himself booked like this. That's a good point.
Exactly. You know, go backstage and ask HBK and Triple H, hey, if this were you, is this how you'd want to be treated upon your return?
Would you call this a protected finish? Oh, Shawn Michaels 1995 tantrum out the building.
Then Road Dogg kind of, oh, you didn't know? Get out of my face. Chris, I've wanted more emotion in wrestling. I've wanted people to care about wins and losses and titles. And
you're about to talk about Cameron Grimes.
Chris, I have never seen half as many people upset over losing a title as Shotzi Blackheart was over losing this stupid tank. Chris, I want the dumbest monologue ever from Shotzi. You know, my dad gave me that tank, and then he backed up to take a picture of me in the tank, and a bus ran over him, or something like that. This mental breakdown over
she
a stupid toy.
She drives the tank to honor her father, Jeff.
Oh my God.
I hope someday I have a child and they drive a miniature guitar-shaped vehicle to honor me. Because then and only then would I know they like me.
You see, my dad was in the army. And the tank meant... I'm just watching this. And she is having a nervous breakdown. By the way, this isn't helping Toni Storm any either.
It's so weird because, like, it was all about Toni Storm's new attitude, and those were the commentary notes, and having this distraction finish, it gets Toni Storm a win, but really what you needed to showcase is that, like, Toni's got a new mean streak, and Toni should have been, like, she shouldn't have been there and talking with Shotzi at the end of the match, at absolute minimum.
Yeah, it's like, oh, are you okay?
Yeah, like, no, you just took advantage of a distraction to get the pin on shot. Like, oh, are you okay? Like,
sportsmanship now, after you get the win. What a jerk.
Gotta be graceful in victory. Gotta be graceful in victory.
Oh my gosh. I mean, between those three things, my head just exploded. Gargano is still fantastic, but I am also convinced there are two people who are these Scream people, right?
Right. Yeah. No, you've got Indy and then I'm thinking it's Austin Theory.
Austin Theory. Yeah. I'm thinking that too. I'm thinking like the original Scream, there's two Ghostface killers.
Right. Right. Yeah. No, I think that's absolutely right. I enjoyed the Thatch is Thatch Can thing still. It's weird that they're actually like making Andrew a thing.
I think his name now is Austin Gray.
Yeah, now
it was originally Andrew Green.
You know what? He was actually introduced as Austin. It's just that Thatcher kept mangling his name.
Oh, how quickly is he going to be getting rid of that name Austin, because people might get confused with 316.
That's true.
He's just going to be Gray.
No, better yet, Jeff. In a few weeks, the kid that we used to see on TV will be known only as Theory. You'll have Riddle and Theory.
Oh, there we go. We have two Austins. That's right. We can't have that anymore.
Theory and Riddle.
Oh, my goodness. Riddle Theory.
Riddle Theory.
Oh, my goodness.
It makes you think.
Oh, yeah. I mean, the whole build of Maverick and Dane just to have that beatdown feels like we've invested a little too much.
I mean, again, I liked the way they got the toughness heat back on Dane, but this is sort of a dead end for Maverick and Dane here. Like, and they don't need to be broken up at this point, but they also do not need to be getting the win over the Kings of NXT.
To get the call back now. Oh my gosh, is that the zombie referee?
Oh, God. But no. Even better, though, Jeff, is the way they explain how the zombie is not actually a zombie. Like to bring up that point, that was, you were talking about points where you're screaming at your TV. I screamed at my TV over that because I was like, it is a expletive deleted kayfabe world. What does that even mean then?
Yes, the zombies were real.
What is that crap then? Yeah, it's fantasy within a fantasy.
I'm hoping for a Walking Dead story where a zombie is in the performance center and infecting people at this point. If we're gonna make this real, let's go all the way.
This would be another oddly meta angle for WWE. I think they have some of that backstage. Do you want to talk about
No, I want to do more zombie jokes for a second.
Jokes. I'm into
it. Yeah, I want them all to go forever as soulless, brainless wrestlers repeating the same angles over and over again.
How would you know it was any different from what you were seeing on your television screen from week to week, Jeff?
Maybe I'm a zombie viewer for the past 20 years where I've just
It feels like I'm a zombie viewer for at least, ever since the post-Daniel Bryan period, where this company wanted very, heavily to just entirely focus on Roman Reigns and the project of making us love him as a babyface. It does sort of feel like they write angles and nerf angles in a way that you just can simply never, even if it's your two favorite wrestlers, Bayley and Sasha, they do things that just keep you from, loving what you're watching, even if you, love those two performers.
All right, before I make another crack, let's give thanks to our sponsor here real quick. MyBookie, between the NFL and college ball, there's no shortage of games to watch. And with thousands of lines available on all your favorite sports and events, you can turn your game day into payday with MyBookie. If you're the type of guy who likes to back the big favorites, consider putting a couple in a parlay for a much bigger payout. Not only do parlays make meaningless games exciting, but more importantly, they give you a chance to turn ordinary bets into a real moneymaker. Don't forget the underdogs. They have a ton of value. The thing about the NFL is that underdogs are never really dogs on Sunday. Every team truly has a chance to win, except the Bengals or the Jets. And you do too. Game spreads, championship futures, and player prop bets. It's never too late to get in on the action. Start turning your sports knowledge into actual cash in your wallet. Sign up at MyBookie, and when you do, use our promo code ROPES, ROPES, to claim a deposit match dollar for dollar all the way up to $1,000. It's a bonus designed to give you a little help and a head start on your winning season. That's promo code ROPES, R-O-P-E-S, for you to claim your bonus when you make your deposit. Stacked UFC cards, presidential prop bets, which are now expired, but I believe Chris was asking for the code this week.
Yeah, I had a friend who actually ended up making some prop bets.
Nice!
I tried to guide her through. I'll have to ask her how it works, given the fact that things are still ongoing, but
She bet politics, did she?
Yeah, she bet state outcomes. And rather than just like pure polls or whatever, we're actually kind of like looking at like what the actual odds were and trying to be a little bit more savvy and, you know, just so like, you know, if Georgia plays out, I think she'll be doing okay.
All the major sports and more. Sign up today. Begin your winning season exclusively at MyBookie. Once again, that code R-O-P-E-S. And we thank them for sponsoring us. And we thank Chris's friend for using the code. So maybe they'll come back. yeah. Back to Wednesday night. Between Chris Jericho screaming at me in commentary all night and then flipping on NXT and having Beth literally yell, "Oh my gosh, that's the zombie referee." I'm just gonna watch these things on mute, I think, until I get promos.
The one nice note on commentary was that it was nice to hear Jim Ross actually seem engaged for a second, and not sleepwalking through the shows when Moxley and Eddie Kingston was happening. Like, you could tell that Ross was actually enjoying himself. Real quickly, SmackDown, because we don't have much other main roster stuff to hit here.
You don't want to talk about Retribution this week?
My boy, Mr. Jack. Mr. Jack's had a bit of cold spell, but he also got his heat back this week, if memory recalls.
So his first name, Slap?
Yeah, Slap.
Did they call him Slappy? As a nickname?
not unless you want to be on the
like Slappy
the
White
receiving end of the Jack, my friend. Yeah. So
still in the
that.
Hockey mask though. Still in the hockey mask.
Still. Oh man, that mask. that mask is fantastic.
Okay, go ahead. Sorry.
No. Jey Uso. Is sort of like, I mean, it's the thing that keeps me watching SmackDown because like I like the Roman angle-ish. What I liked this week, it was kind of like what we were just saying about Bayley and Sasha, how there's just stuff that kind of keeps you a little icy. Jay's performance and his character kind of is still weird. But, like, I like how much of a dick Roman is now.
I like that he's actually the one in charge.
I like that too.
And that Heyman is kind of a consigliere, but he's still a lackey at the same time.
Well, it looked like initially Heyman was pulling the strings, and now we see that, no, it's Roman who is pulling the strings here.
And that Heyman was telling the truth. He's the one that's corrupting me.
Yeah.
In a way.
No, I mean, it's not wrong. Now this puts an interesting wrinkle into what's really going on inside Roman's head. Like, because it was easier before when it was Paul corrupting Roman, like that explains the mental motivations, and now we have a new open question of what's going on in his head. It doesn't need to be answered like this week or next week, but it does need to be answered at some point, and it needs to be answered in some sort of way that's satisfactory.
As opposed to last week, where we had something really to sink our teeth into, NXT UK, I thought was just a show.
You know, okay, like the opening match was entertaining. Like, I liked watching Sam Gradwell and Pretty Deadly versus Gallus. Mm-hmm. Like,
yeah.
There's no stakes to it or anything like that, but, like, it was well worked. Joe Coffey can still go. Like, I enjoy Joe Coffey's match style. But you're right. Like, there's nothing to the Aaliyah James match other than Piper Niven showing some edge and, like, an attempt to make the Kaylee Ray Piper Niven thing make sense. Oh, Eddie Dennis continues to be like the champion of promos. Cause like he does really good promos. We have not loved the in front of the curtain stuff, but like this promo with him and the Hunt was cool. I liked that. And then the rounds match does nothing for me.
Yeah, I would agree. I think Eddie Dennis is really, you know, I love the guy. On promos. I didn't like what the dragon get up he had before.
And, yeah.
You know, his wrestling, you know, his gear is improved.
Yeah,
so
it's better. Look, if he's managing the Hunt and he's this like brooding guy fuming on the outside, while the Hunt is going crazy on the inside, and he also has this power to real quickly just hold his finger up to his mouth and like bring them to a calm. It's a very good and powerful visual image. And it's kind of like what we're talking about with McAfee, where like, the writing and the execution on this gets that like subtlety conveys a bigger message here. When the promo ends and Eddie Dennis just shushes you have boar and primate just go from like kind of frothing energy to tame. I liked that.
Let me throw an idea out to you. And this might not be for a while, but eventually. Let's say we get through this program with Eddie Dennis and the Hunt. We want to turn the Hunt back face or whatever. Eddie Dennis with the grizzled young veterans.
Oh, I'd love that. I think that'd be great.
Eddie Dennis and Zach on promos, I think together would be great on this show. Just as an uber heel type of crew, because it needs it. Because Walter's not doing a lot of promos. Imperium's not either. You know, we kind of need that.
It's the one deficit of Imperium, right? Like, they're a great faction. They have a great look. The match style is great. Wolf, I like him. But having someone who can sort of definitively be the strong mouthpiece is the one thing that Imperium lacks. And it's not ideal, given Walter's style, to have him be the talker. It's not that he can't talk. He's a good promo. It's just like him as the strong, silent type works so much better for what they're trying to do.
Well, there's not a lot to talk about in WWE, so let's do a Full Gear preview just for craps and giggles and to fill time because the people want it. And get out of here. We'll be able to talk a lot about this. Quick update. I did Warren Hayes' show with a preview. So a lot of those opinions of mine will be the same, but I get the chance to talk to Chris, who has a different perspective. So we will see if we still agree or not on these types of things. 9 matches on the card, couple matches moved around a bit. On the, I guess it'll be called the buy-in, we'll call it the pre-show, the NWA World Women's Championship is being defended. Serena Deeb, your champion, taking on Allison Kay. Fresh off her run in the NWA.
I think they just changed the title not that long ago, so I think Deeb's going to win. Allison Kay's okay. I like Deeb.
I like Deeb's on this new, ever since the second Mae Young Classic. She got hired as a trainer for NXT, pretty much. I'm liking this kind of uneasy relationship between the NWA and AEW because I think the NWA kind of needs it right now to even stay afloat.
Oh yeah, no, I think this is good for them, but I also think it expands out AEW's universe a little bit in a constructive way. It's good to have more wrestling vehicles.
Yeah, AEW needs depth in the women's department. Allison Kay can provide that, but I see her kind of as a gatekeeper type, which is fine. I think this match will be pretty good. I think Serena Deeb has to maintain it just for now, and I think eventually they start building up these kind of AEW-NWA rivalries in the women's division just to keep that division fresh because it needs a lot of work right now. It needs help.
Oh yeah, that's the other thing. AEW is definitely getting something out of this, where they are getting an augment into their women's division, and like you know, the NWA relationship. If you're thinking about who's been in the NWA orbit, that includes people like Ricky Starks. That includes people like Eddie Kingston. There have been a lot of really good like ex NWA talents that have come into AEW and been part of that and brought a seriousness to AEW that I think the show needs. And I think in the case of the AEW women's division, you can't have Nyla Rose constantly have the same 3 matches every week. I mean, I guess you can, and they're certainly experimenting with that, but I wouldn't.
We will get to her in a bit. Moved from the buy-in to the main card, Orange Cassidy taking on John Silver in a singles match. I'll go first on this one. This is going to be comedy, 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 work rate, work rate, work rate, comedy, 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 run to the finish, work rate. It's no reason to beat Orange Cassidy here. John Silver, I love. I love the Beaver Boys. I love them in the Dark Order. They've parlayed the fact that John Silver can't corpse in a sketch or can't stop from corpsing in a sketch into him being now a star, which boggles the mind at times as a comedian. But yeah, I think Orange Cassidy wins here.
Oh yeah, no. Silver versus Orange, I think Orange wins.
Okay, I just wondered if you had any thoughts on John Silver and his character.
No, I think he's funny. I think your description of the match is absolutely apt. There will be a couple cool few spots. They will be doing mostly a comedy-flavored match. I think the comedy and stuff will land really well with AEW's audience and the people who kind of like what they're doing. I think it's a misstep for Orange Cassidy because it's kind of like, all right, is he the funny guy or is he like a top of the card actual world champion type of material? The tension to me is sort of like, if he's top of the card world champion material, you shouldn't be having matches with guys like John Silver.
It's like a stop-start type thing because it's like, okay, we've built him up into this Cody match to be a real hot dog, you know, main event player. Same with the Moxley match, I believe, or there was another match in there for another title. I forget what it was, but
the Jericho match. Yeah, Jericho match too.
Yeah, it's like, okay, do you want this guy to be a star? Do you want him to be a best friend? Because you got to go one way or another.
There's just two different tracks. And so, like, that's my only, like, I don't think it's going to be a bad match. I just think win or lose, obviously losing would be worse. Win or lose, like, this is a misstep for Cassidy's character.
Agreed. In another probably comedy match, probably a cinematic match, Matt Hardy taking on Sammy Guevara in the Elite Deletion match. I believe this is going to be a Hardy compound type thing. Interesting. I wonder how cinematic matches are going to be received now in AEW, now that WWE is kind of turning this horse into glue, so to speak, and not having Jeremy Borash as kind of a creative force behind it. Go ahead.
Hopefully Hardy has an actual sort of like narrative that he wants to do with Guevara. I mean, this angle is very cold for me, and I, especially after the last match and the way the last match went off, I just have no interest in seeing this match.
I think what they're going to try and accomplish here is Matt Hardy is going to win this match.
Right.
But I think Sammy Guevara is going to be very valiant in defeat because it appeared on Wednesday they're going to tease a babyface turn for him. So I think they're going to continue to build on that.
Yeah. And when that gets into the other issue of like the Inner Circle MJF stuff where...
We will get to that, yes. Yeah, yeah. But overall, I think for quality control's sake, they want to do this, especially after... Look, at All In, what happened during this match sucked the energy out of the entire pay-per-view.
Jeff, they've had two incidences like this in like between the last pay-per-view and this one. You had the Matt Hardy incident, and then you had the one with the guy laying prone in the ring for like...
Oh, that's right. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it's like they absolutely 100% cannot have a third one.
No, I would agree there. So there's... I believe this has probably already been taped, to be honest with you, but don't quote me on that because I don't know exactly what an Elite Deletion match will be. For the AEW Women's World Championship, the champion Hikaru Shida versus Nyla Rose with Vicky Guerrero. Chris, I will let you opine first on whatever you'd like in this match.
I can't wait. It's a match I've been waiting to see for what feels like years. I never thought it would happen. I think Nyla Rose has to prevail because you've paired her with Vicky Guerrero and there's nowhere to go, which will lead us to a Nyla Rose championship reign. And
again,
what new horizons will Nyla Rose climb to this time?
Yeah, let me state this. Hikaru Shida is a pretty good champion, in my opinion. The problem is they're trying to make her get over by talking.
That's not working either.
She's kind of a Bret Hart character. She gets over by being scrappy and technical, and you got to put in people with more charisma in the ring with her. Vicky Guerrero adds nothing to Nyla Rose. I hate to say that.
No, Vicky Guerrero doing the Sumimasen thing was very questionable, too.
That? The fact that she's a member Barry's character, where she's just doing her WWE gimmick and they haven't changed it at all, is very disappointing. And Nyla Rose is improved in the ring. Nyla Rose is great at garbage matches. Nyla Rose's character hasn't done anything except be the bully the whole time. So it's like, okay, we're going to give her the belt again, and we're going to try to have to find a babyface to build in the midst of this when you're only two.
She's Baron Corbin almost. It's not that like she has bad matches, but they're like, they're a match. Like she has a match that's well executed, but
here are the two most over women in the division. Britt Baker and Sheeta. Okay. Britt Baker's not going to challenge Nyla Rose, I don't think, unless you're going to try and build that heel versus heel thing. Chris Statlander's still on crutches, last I checked. And I don't think Statlander's ready for the monster babyface push just yet.
Makes no sense to turn Penelope Ford.
Makes no sense to turn Penelope Ford. Thunder Rosa isn't on the roster. Serena Deeb, maybe you could do that. Feed her to Nyla. But
which is crazy, though, because she's a champion. Like you're talking about feeding a champion to another champion because you don't have a better thing to do.
But you could build Serena to be a threat to Nyla Rose as opposed to feed, you know what I mean
I get it,
her.
But like, it's just so silly as the first title defense to burn the champion versus champion angle. Like that speaks to the weakness of this division.
This entire division does not have any personality, except maybe Brandi Rhodes, who you don't want in the ring all that often.
Everyone who has personality is a heel. It does yes. not have a babyface who has personality. And where you're getting into real issues now is like, you can't. Sheeta has had every match she more or less can. Like she's done the Penelope Ford match. She's done Nyla Rose. She's done. The only person she had, the Dark Order. She didn't have a Dark Order match.
Anna Jay,
yeah.
You have Tenara Conti out there, but she's kind of in the doghouse after elbowing Abaddon in the throat.
Oh, sure.
Abaddon
was a babyface, right?
No, I don't think so. I think she was a heel. I think she was a zombie heel. Oh my God,
heel! You just need heels. You don't actually need faces.
Big Swole? All she's been shown to do is dance and be angry.
Yeah, Big Swole is not the person I want working 20-minute matches on my pay-per-view.
Little Swole is, though. Go sign Nicole Savoy, please. Because she also has the ability to talk, and that's what you need to build this division. You need someone who can talk other than Britt Baker, because Britt Baker's fantastic, don't get me wrong. But you need more than one talker in a division.
And she's also the comedy upper mid-card heel. She's not like the dominant Nick Bockwinkel champion character. That's not what she's doing right now.
I think you're exactly right on that. You need someone with a little bit of heft to them.
Yeah, and Rose is not that person either. No. Especially not paired with Vicky Guerrero. If she was paired with a different manager.
Yes.
That would honestly make a world of like, let's say Nyla Rose was paired with Taz.
Or Tully Blanchard.
Like anyone.
Or Jake.
But the gravitas of the manager makes a big difference here, and this division very much needs that. But beyond the Nick Bockwinkel classic heel with gravitas, they need a face who can talk, who is cool, who people want to hang out with.
The energetic baby face. The scrappy baby face. The baby face who can get everybody fired up. She does okay at that.
But like Toni Storm's brand of baby facing. Yeah.
It's Kylie Rae would be great here.
There's a niche definitely for a character like hers. Sure.
Yes. Maybe the Sea Stars will come over and you can make them spunky baby faces. Cause I think they'd be great at that too. I like them a lot. I think Nyla Rose takes the title off of Sheeta.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah.
Maybe we get the return of Riho. Whoopty crap. I don't.
There's your underdog, spunky, scrappy baby face.
But she can't talk. And her and Sheeta are almost interchangeable in that way.
I know. Their pluses and minuses, if you just put them on paper, are really, really similar.
Right. You know, I mean, I'd kill for them to sign Julia, but that's not going to happen anytime soon. She's fantastic. Okay. So now we're starting to get into the meat and potatoes section of the pay-per-view. Let's start with Chris Jericho versus MJF with Wardlow. MJF wins. He is allowed to join the inner circle.
God. Thinking about this angle in its totality. I think MJF wins. I don't think this is about Jericho getting his heat back or anything like that.
I think MJF obviously wins, and I think he cheats to do it.
Yeah, and sure.
And then I think the story becomes, Chris, you've been in a band. I've been in improv groups. We've all lived through this kind of thing. We start this group, start to build it. Then one day you're sitting around talking and going, you know what? We got rid of this one weak spot right here. We'd be a great group right now. So I think that's what MJF starts doing in the inner circle. I think he gets rid of Sammy. I think he gets rid of Jake Hager and brings in Wardlow to be part of the inner circle. Then I think eventually he usurps Jericho and Proud and Powerful back MJF's play. I think that's how this goes.
Yeah, it's interesting. The whole we're kind of split on this thing right now. No, you are seeing Proud and Powerful kind of wavering here.
They were a little bit too vociferous in the objection to having MJF in there. So that kind of leads me to think they're going to be in on it eventually.
That's it. Yeah. Yeah. All right. Oh, I forgot. It's because Sammy wasn't okay with it. Who was okay with it? I thought they were the ones who were okay with it. Or like Santana was and Ortiz wasn't or something like
yes,
that.
Yes. That's what it was. Yeah, it was like,
I don't know. I don't know that they know. It's so shticky. Like we're talking about wrong direction stuff with the Orange Cassidy here. And like the MJF's another example of like, are we building him up or are we moving him down?
This is a guy that needs edge. Right. And instead they're kind of doing comedy with him.
Yeah, yeah. He had that with Wardlow. He had his big heavy. He had his $1 million man gimmick, and I just he wins. Yeah, he wins. Jericho loses.
Speaking of things that need a little bit more of an edge, FTR, Cash Wheeler, and Dax Harwood, the tag team champions taking on the Young Bucks, Matt and Nick Jackson. The Young Bucks lose. They were never challenged for the AEW World Tag Team Championship again. Tully Blanchard is banned from ringside. Now, I've spoken of my disappointment, FTR, in terms of I want them to be the punch, kick, break legs, break arms. They take wrestling seriously.
You want the NXT run of FTR.
Hmm?
You want the NXT run of FTR.
Yes.
Yeah.
And they've come. After years of trash talking, to take on the cocky high flyers who call themselves the best tag team in the world. And unfortunately, what we have now is we have unclear heels in the Young Bucks, who were they tried to baby just for this match alone. And we have kind of heels that do great choreography in the ring. I still love their matches, but it doesn't feel like they're the old school mechanics of NXT.
No, and they're also like not entirely unlikable and not entirely unsympathetic either. Like they're heels and like they definitely do heelish stuff and like dickish stuff, but like you don't hate them either.
Right. The truck angle really kind of cooled them off a bit, I think.
Absolutely. No, that was so silly. That was such a silly
Tully's kind of giving them a little bit more of an edge, but I'd like to see one of those two guys step it up on the mic and give a little bit more edge as well.
The truck angle is a really good illustration, though, of where they have not quite been committed to the project of making FTR unlikable. And, like, having them come in as, like, Adam Page's buddy. Like, they just...
Chris, this should be the biggest match on the card, quite frankly.
Oh, I know. This should be a very hot angle, but, like, it almost... inserting the, it felt like the Young Bucks were inserted into this just because they spent so much time and energy making the Young Bucks a heel tag team, up to and including injuring Tony Schiavone, to only turn around and, you know, have Nick Jackson be this figure of sympathy by doing an injury angle and them saying we'll never challenge for the titles again. It feels like stipulation-wise, the stipulation feels hot-shotted and unearned. It feels narratively desperate, like we need to make the Bucks obviously the sympathetic figures here, so we're just going to tack on the stipulation rather than it being a narrative plot point that you earned. Or maybe better, you have FTR demand that if the Young Bucks want to have this match, then they have to make this agreement. It should be an okay match, but this angle has been at best sloppily written. But I would say poorly written.
So who leaves the champions?
I think FTR does, especially given what you were saying earlier about the injury report, Matt Jackson actually being injured.
I think, and I don't know this for a fact because they rarely do DQ finishes, I could see Tully Blanchard coming out there and trying to screw the Bucks and then the Bucks winning by DQ, and that way they don't have to move the belt.
Sure, sure.
And the Young Bucks don't have to do this, and we can put it off for a later time when Matt's healed up. Because I think Tully Blanchard has to show up during this match, even though he's quote-unquote banned.
Right. Which is also a stipulation that was not really earned.
Exactly.
Yeah. I mean, if anything, he would be banned from ringside from, like, Sean Spears matches because he's always, sliding Spears the loading, you know, the stuff to load up his glove.
Yeah, there's a lot going on in this thing, and I think a lot of it's going to be interconnected amongst members of the Elite. So
that's the other thing, too, dude. It's like the Elite characters, I find all of their personalities to be grating at this point.
Well, then let's go on and do it. Hangman Adam Page versus Kenny Omega in the Eliminator Tournament final match. Winner's going to get a future AEW World Championship match. You have the emo drunk cowboy versus the over-the-top heel.
I liked Adam. There was a sweet spot here in the last few months where I was like, Adam Page, I'm really getting into this guy. I enjoy him. But the emo drunk thing, it is Nowheresville for me. It's a nothing characterization. I think, who's champion right, Moxley? I think Omega wins. I think Omega wins, and that kind of gets Moxley moving on to his next thing here, which is going to be Moxley versus Omega, which is an interesting and different kind of flavor of feud. What do you think? Do you think it's Paige winning?
My fear about this match is that it's going to get really histrionic.
Oh, yeah.
And it's going to be, can Adam Page hurt his friend? It's going to be Roman Reigns and Jey Uso.
Oh, no, I think it's going to be even better. I think they're both going to break down and start crying.
Think Omega's going to start crying?
Yeah, because Omega's going to want to act, too. I get that it doesn't make a lot of sense, but Kenny Omega's a guy who likes to do his acting. And I could totally see them, mostly crying and stuff. No, I mean,
like fake crying for Omega.
Yeah, it might be fake. He basically takes advantage of Adam Page's tears, but yeah, no, there'll be these I'm sorry, I love you spots and stuff.
I think the correct way to go is for Adam Page to get born again hardcore during this match, become Mr. Cowboy shit again, beat Kenny, and then Kenny beats the crap out of him after the match, which will then eventually work as itself as an injury as to a reason why Adam Page loses against Moxley. And then we can finally get the final form of heel Kenny as opposed to dopey goofball heel. I think they're going to go with anyways. But I'm waiting for Omega to channel his inner Shane Douglas, Ric Flair, Nick Bockwinkle, main event heel, not playing goofiness to the back of the room type thing.
Yeah, no, because there is a main event character performer in there. It's just his sensibilities right now are making a satire out of all the things that he does that are main event level.
His instincts are cartoons.
Yeah.
And you can tell. And you can tell. And it's like, oh, he wants to scenery you here. This is gonna be his Pacino moment. And I hope they don't do a lot of
anime style acting too. You see the way emotions are portrayed in animes. The big those kind of like screamy faces and stuff. You definitely see that a lot in Omega's performance.
Singles match for the AEW TNT Championship. Cody Rhodes, now having his last name with Arn Anderson, versus Darby Allin. I have a bit of a flag to knit here, Chris. You know the territories. I grew up with territories. When they created television belts in the territories, it was because most shows were squash matches and promos, and it gives people the chance to see a main event level match without having to go to the arena because they may not be there for a while. But it's also to help drive you to the arena to watch main event matches. Because, you can watch a match as good as this.
To watch the show. I mean, back in the day, like, especially if the TV champion was someone cool, it might be the difference between me watching WCW Saturday Night and not watching it just to see the TV title match.
When the era of pay-per-view came on, television titles would be defended on the pay-per-view, which goes against the very nature of why you had a television championship. Now, Chris, this is the AEW TNT Championship. Is this show on TNT?
It sure is, Jeff.
No, it's not.
Oh, are you talking? I thought you were talking about Dynamite. I thought you were talking.
No, this match is on pay-per-view.
Okay, so like, look, you're making me look terrible. No, it's fine.
I asked you an open-ended question. I thought you knew the answer
to. In post, you can't just like, whatever. That's fine. I'm a professional. I'll rise above it. WCW back in the 90s, the way they started explaining the television title being defended on pay-per-views is that they would say, like, the TV title is defended on every television program, which is the other problem with the TNT TV title. It is not defended every week.
Right. This is the TNT championship to be defended on TNT. Look, if you're going to make a secondary title, that's fine. It's just
it's neither a TNT title nor a television title.
Yes, they themselves bought into the lineage of this whole thing. And now it's just goofy. I think there's an obvious path they're going to go here, but I want to hear what you think of this match.
So I think Cody turns heel big time on Darby Allin during this match. And Arn helps him cheat to win. I think that's the path here. I don't think Darby prevails.
I agree. Cody Rhodes has the oddest charisma for me personally watching it, because he starts on these expository promos and I just go, oh, here we go again. Here's the WWE style. And by the time he finishes, I am wrapped up in a feud of his. And I'm amazed by that, Chris. It's what I like to call debate club charisma. I didn't expect to like him. He makes a solid case and lawyers me into the building every time. And he did on Wednesday as well. I think with Arn Anderson slugging Orange Cassidy during that match, yes, Cody is going to go full heel here. Now, who he ends up with, who knows? I think Darby Allin eventually gets some help to help counter Arn Anderson in the form of, and this is kind of me cheating, but a news item that came across this week is that the WWE store has pulled all Sting merchandise. This would indicate that Sting is no longer with the company. I could see Sting helping Darby Allin in some way. Now, I don't think it'll be this night necessarily, because I think what they're going to do is they're going to establish Cody as the heel. They're going to screw Darby Allin, although they do have a crowd there, so they may want to crown Darby here. I give that credit, but I think Darby wins the title on the second try, because they've had to reestablish Darby as a babyface after almost turning him heel originally. which is another thing that boggles the mind. But do you think Darby takes the title here after 2 or 3 weeks of Cody being the champion?
No, I think it's too soon, especially if you want to, one, establish Sting, and two, establish that Cody's now a heel. And to your point earlier, and this is what I think is the most compelling evidence that we are doing something longer with the title reign, you had that point of characterization where Arn Anderson attacked Orange Cassidy during the match. The title needs to be on Cody Rhodes a little bit longer. I mean, to the point, I would have turned him heel without the title. But, it makes some sense. The title becomes the motivation for him. It's as precious.
Cody has said that for factions and stuff like that, they're kind of looking at the New Japan model. Is it possible that we're going to kind of have a heel elite and we're going to have another heel group, and maybe Tully and Arn are joining forces right now, and it's going to be Cody and FTR?
Oh, it's certainly possible.
And maybe Sean Spears.
As I said earlier, you don't actually need baby faces. You just need heels.
Yeah, because who needs
people
a baby
don't like
face?
Baby faces.
Yeah, why do people look? Most people are terrible people at heart, given their own devices. You know, we'll just make everybody slight shades of black and just send them out there and be greedy and stuff. We don't need good guys. We just need anti-heroes.
You know, I wish a pro wrestling company would, instead of doing it inadvertently, actually just like completely embrace it and go all in on it. It's just like a federation entirely of the worst people in the world.
Isn't that Lucha Underground in a way?
It's like Lucha Underground was good at having clear points of like baby faces.
That's true.
If you didn't like Sexy Star, like they booked her like a baby face.
Just like a gritty 70s type promotion that's bringing in a bunch of like Mr. Wrestlings and Assassins Abdullah
the
Butcher.
Mangler. Yeah, you know, like those type of characters.
It's like the Island of Misfit Toys meets the Legion of Doom. And everybody's just there for money and power. And then, you just set them off. I'm all for that.
Yeah,
I'm all
Assassin
for like
Assassin 2 versus the Mangler in the main event of my federation.
You have your Ric Flair type of characters in there who are, they're solid workers and they can scrap, but they're kind of pretty boys at the same time. Give me
everything. Hollywood Moneybags McGee versus like ex-prison Mike. These are the main events of my federation.
Once again, it shocks me that the two best, the two things that draw me to wrestling right now are a guy who wasn't even with this company 2 months ago and a former punter. But here we are, Eddie Kingston with a money promo on Wednesday. I am here for this, man.
Boy, what a great promo this was. And on Wednesday, my head was not fully in the game when I was watching this, and I said when we taped this tonight, I wanted to go back and rewatch the show, and I am so glad I did because my head was in it this time, and bro, what a man, Kingston, he's so great. He's so good, and Moxley was really good for his part, too. The issue with Moxley's not on the microphone for me. It's been the matches, but it's so compelling. Unlike other stipulations and stuff that I have complained about at length on this show and in prior episodes, and will continue to in the future, because so often we just throw out stipulations and they have no meaning or merit. In the case of this feud, there is so much meaning and so much merit to the I Quit match. And they did even more during this promo to really hit that home in subtle ways, but just Moxley needling Kingston about his mother and everything about this. Oh, so good. So rich.
There's real heat. People in wrestling do not market hate enough for my liking. I think there needs to be real hatred in wrestling, or at least I need to believe it, as opposed to I get a title opportunity. No, I hate the champ. I'm going to take the title from them because I hate their friggin' guts. How about that? That kind of thing.
I think Moxley using his love for Kingston as a weapon against him.
Mm-hmm.
That's a great babyface play.
And I think this is going to have the appropriate tone for a match, too. I think, I don't think they're going to go full old school, and you put the mic in somebody's mouth, they're, no, no, and then they take the mic away. But I think there's going to be two guys trying to beat the crap out of each other with a lot of stuff. And I think it's going to be a vicious street fight all around this building until one guy gives up. I don't think Eddie Kingston's getting the title here. I know people are saying, well, maybe it's just a temporary thing while Mox goes to Japan. I don't see it. I think Moxley retains, but I think it's going to be a hell of a match. I think there's going to be some chicanery going on from probably the Lucha Brothers. Maybe Butcher and Blade as well.
No. Pac.
No?
I think Pac's going to cost Kingston the match here.
Oh, Kingston. Okay.
Yeah, if you watch that Pac promo, Pac's clearly bothered by Kingston. And where Kingston's going next is to Pac.
That'd be a nice surprise for him to show up in the States. I don't know if he's still quarantining or not, but I'm gonna love the hell out of this match, and I can feel it. But I think Moxley retains.
Yeah, no. The reason people think that Kingston might get the title here is the highest praise for Kingston performance, which is that Eddie Kingston is a world champion level talent. We've been saying that for a while now. Eddie Kingston rocks, and I think this match is going, you know, like sometimes the Moxley outside of the ring match doesn't hit me, but like with Kingston and Moxley, the tone of this feud, what it dictates, it's actually perfect for Mox's match style. And I think this match is going to deliver. I'm really looking forward to seeing this one.
We'll put a prop bet in here. How long do you think Cody versus Darby is going to go? And at what minute mark will Cody blade?
oh, Cody blades before the 10-minute mark. Cody blades like 6 to 8 minutes in.
Okay, the latest. I have it as a 20-minute match, and he blades at the 10 mark. But.
Yeah, Cody blades at the 2. And I think I had the match coming in around maybe under 20. So I was thinking originally I was going to say 13 to 15. Maybe that's a little short. Maybe it's more like 15 to 18.
Okay, cool. I think there's gonna be plenty of blood in this match, and it'll help sell it as well in terms of Moxley and Kingston. And I think you don't need any more blood up and down the card. Jericho and MJF may push for it, but who knows? I'll be looking forward to this. That's gonna do it for us, I think, Chris. Unless you got something else.
I don't. No, that's the main event. That's it. That's all we got.
Cool. You can follow me at CrapGame13. You can follow Chris at Chris Novembrino.
Yeah.
I almost said at Dr. Nove because I have that in my head and I said that once. And just follow the show at Shake Them Ropes. It's been a week of politics. Chris covers politics. Chris will tell you about his podcast.
Yeah, so Don't Worry About the Government can be found on iTunes, Stitcher, and Spotify. I'm now putting up video versions of the show, which you can, if you support the show, you can get the full video version of the podcast over at patreon.com/DWATG. There's also a video adjunct, which you can check out over on YouTube. Search for the Don't Worry About the Government YouTube channel, or go to my Twitter account or the Don't Worry About the Government Twitter account at DWATG, and you can find the link right there. It's honestly the quickest way right now as we're climbing our way up the algorithm. But if you want to see video versions of the show, video clips, I'm like doing like, you know, little 25, 30 minute shows here once or twice a week on the video side, and you can go and check that out. So do it.
And Chris, just a quick update here from our decision desk. Rufus T. Firefly has been appointed the head of Fredonia.